So, which networks functions is AT&T virtualizing first, and how far along are you with those? I know you've been doing quite a bit of work over the past couple of years, so just give us a quick update on where things stand.
We've started with virtualizing what I think of as generic network functions, things related to the layer 3, layer 4 plus stack. So we started with routers on the edge for our network on demand service, and then we're moving in from there. Starting then moving next to the data center and the local, what we think of as local software-defined networks, and then from there, more of the global network controllers. So that's one part of it. And then alongside of it, in terms of more of the application, what I think of as application-specific network functions, our starting point has been on the voice applications that we have for our enterprises. So the virtual network functions that relate to IMS and VoLTE and all of the related SIP type of applications we have. Starting first with more of our enterprise needs for, and then moving on from there.
Gotcha. Okay.
So those were the first ones. We're now heavily involved in the work on the MPC/EPC area. That's the next big nut to follow. And then we have had going on for a while in our TV space for transcoding and content management, but that was put on pause while we waited for our acquisition to be finished. Now we're going back into that full on.
Right. Excellent. So what kinds of challenges are you facing when it comes to managing performance, and how are you addressing them? For example, how are you orchestrating and managing all these virtualized network functions?
So it starts with, first is laying them out, placing them in the right locations and on the right resources. That's we think of it as the starting point. And so we rely heavily on OpenStack and it's the Nova scheduler. We've tweaked it a bit to our needs to provide inputs and characteristics that are important to these network functions that maybe a traditional IT function wouldn't have. So we've had to add things that way. We've also heavily used other open source tools like OpenDaylight for managing some of the actual application-specific network functions. And then, obviously, we have a lot of existing legacy OSS, BSS tooling that we're repurposing for this need. So things like data collection and analysis, active inventory, these types of systems that we've just, for the most part, built ourselves. We're leveraging that heavily. What we refer to as our ECOMP, our Enhanced Control Orchestration Management and Policy System.
Right.
That's the starting point. From there, what we're working on now is how do we adjust according to policy and expectations set by the services that we render. So we're trying to do this in a more mechanical way. So we set sort of availability and performance and security type SLAs, we manifest them in policy, and then our systems do what they can to kind of police the policies to ensure that they're met. So we're trying to drive this in what we think of as a control or a closed loop policy management system, where there's a clear cycle from what this expectation is to through the system and through governance of the system, and then it manifested in how we orchestrate and control aspects of it. And a lot of it, as I said, is done starting with our own tooling, but then we're starting to leverage more of what's out in the open, let's say OpenStack Congress and a lot of the other like ETSI specification around Mano. These types of things are guiding our thinking right now.
Right. You mentioned a closed-loop system. That's something I was actually exploring in the report. Some operators seem to be a bit reluctant about automating service assurance in an ISTE environment, such as because they don't trust a closed-loop system where basically the feedback triggers changes to ensure performance. But it sounds like you're pretty comfortable with that. What's the reason for that? Like, for example, is it because you've just got so much information coming in that it really wouldn't be practical to have all these humans acting on that data, or is there some other reason for automating a lot of it?
Certainly, that removing the need for operators is certainly the driving force for this. Mm-hmm. But it's also a strategy that we're taking that's very iterative and very like stepwise, not doing everything all at once, but then managing the cycles that we feel like we have control over, and then building on that, and then being able to roll back as needed, so we can take a very iterative, agile approach to solving this problem. Because, like as you say, there is enormous risk if you go too far, and then you have competing policies and such. So that's something that is taking an iterative approach to make us comfortable to do that.
Right. And you also mentioned some of the legacy tools that you're using. That's another thing I wanted to explore in the report is, how operators are dealing with a hybrid environment, both hybrid platforms and legacy tools, things like that. Could you talk a little bit more about some of the challenges you're facing there with, trying to manage both the new virtual environment and the legacy platforms you've got out there?
Within a telco, there's an enormous amount of sunk investment in tools, inventory and event management systems. So as we've taken on this transformation effort, we didn't really want to reinvent the wheel totally. As a starting point, in the same way, a very iterative approach, we make a facade, or we start with a facade over an existing system if we need to change the API or make it more standard or easier to integrate with other things. So we create an interface that we're comfortable with over top of an existing system. So many of the existing systems didn't have like RESTful API, didn't have something that was compliant with some of these more modern standards. So we put that in place first.
Right.
And that helped us to build in the center the modularity that we're looking to achieve. So across the board, we're heading toward more of a microservices model where each thing is doing its unique thing, but can work together in a modular way, and then we can replace pieces as is convenient for us. Transforming to this more modular model is the key tenet to our domain 2 effort.
Right. And are there any types of tools that you'd like to have in terms of helping you manage this new environment? Is there anything that vendors could be providing? Maybe things that today you'd like to have available, but you're having to create in-house, and that's time-consuming, resource-consuming. Anything you'd like to have to make your life easier in terms of managing performance?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a tendency with the management tools to be very siloed and focused, let's say, on networking, on compute and storage. And given the world of networking and IT are coming together in this context, really trying to find tools that comprehensively show us what's going on is not there right now and something that we need help with. And so there's plenty of examples, especially in the as-a-service world. There's a few monitoring systems that demonstrate what I call end-to-end transaction monitoring and end-to-end sort of visibility transparency can provide. So being able to see in a VNF, like what database calls were made, what API calls were made, what do the packets look like for every transaction, so I can easily go back and see, okay, I was doing something, it was slow, why was it slow? And I can go back and look at past history, because often with complex systems, these issues are intermittent. So you want to have quite a lot of resolution of this data, and a lot of it has to be end-to-end, and it has to be shown together, not separately.
Right.
And so that's a general issue that's a gap for the tools that we've made ourselves and for what's out there for us. So that's probably a key thing. And that's been difficult especially when dealing with more complex and modular systems, is finding where is the bottleneck, where is the latency, where is the packet loss happening, and what piece is causing it. In the old days, it was quite easy to find that. In the new setups with layers of abstraction, it's more tricky. So this kind of end-to-end transaction monitoring is essential.
Right. Okay. A lot of the service providers that are reading this report and listening to this podcast probably aren't as far along as AT&T is in terms of virtualization. So what type of advice would you give them as they're starting out? Like, for example, when enterprises are getting ready to virtualize, one piece of advice you often hear is, you know, take your time, do as much research as possible, virtualize in increments, you know, maybe do a couple of servers, see how things go, and then dive into it a little bit deeper. You know, is there anything that service providers need to be thinking about when they're getting ready to embark on virtualization?
Yes, I mean, there's two or three aspects. One is I think the try it resonates with me. I think for service providers, there's a bit of a hesitancy to try it on other service providers' service. So I think that was the first thing is, okay, you have this voice VNF. Why don't you try it on Amazon and see what happens?
Yep.
And, you know, look at the dynamics of scale out and different sizes of VMs and different as a service options that are available. You know, I was just promoting the idea of using a key value as a service within one of our applications, and that's where I pointed them first. So that also is consistent with service providers, though a bit unique in that dynamic. The other part too is not to lose sight of the model. I feel very strongly that the technology and the financial model have to be very tied together, especially in this realm. I mean, to me, cloud and virtualization is all about capacity management and then reconciliation with the financial part of it. You have to keep an eye on that part, and then typically that will help you make a lot of the decisions as you go forward, whether or not to reserve capacity here or pin CPUs there or to use techniques that require pinning of CPUs or of resources. That's, I think, a second piece of advice, is always keep the financial model close at hand. And then the third thing is I really can't ignore the security aspects too. I mean, putting something into a virtual environment, it certainly has its operational and financial benefits, but you have to balance that with what your risk profile looks like and really understanding what's at risk with using a hypervisor or containers or any or within an SDN. That's, I think, also a very important thing for a service provider to keep in mind, because for obvious reasons, I think.
Right. You made a good point about capacity management. I've always thought that SDN and NFV, I mean, they basically make networks more dynamic. So I would think that, you know, is it fair to say as a result, they basically enable operators to avoid the waste of over-provisioning their networks in order to meet SLAs and other quality targets? Is that a fair way of looking at it?
Absolutely. And so downstream, so at the beginning, it's let's save some money here mm-hmm. and there. But over time, there's enormous opportunity to optimize. And also to open up the aperture for trying things out and making it the unused pieces available for new services or new versions, even in production, so that we can try, you know, within a consistent environment. There's so many options that become available once you virtualize and then you recognize the empty spaces. And I think also business opportunities, things that you look at and see what Amazon's doing with like spot instances. That's something the service providers in our world need to also take into consideration is how do I bin pack to full utilization even in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. you know? So that's one creative way to do that. So I think the business opportunities are pretty cool that way, and then I can imagine seeing some of these guys get into that same realm.
Right. Great. Well, these are all excellent insights. Is there anything else you'd like to add about managing performance in a virtual or hybrid environment?
Yeah, one last thing. I can't I'd be remiss in not mentioning my favorite topic is the horizontally scaling. I think of all the things that I'm dealing with is pressing on the VNF vendors and our own teams to understand horizontal scale better. You know, everyone wants to drive a Ferrari, but it may not be the best way to go 1 mile to work through many lights. It may not be the best way to bring a whole soccer team to a field not very far away. So there may be a bit better way, and that way across the existing clouds and the existing kind of hyperscale companies that have worked very well is to transform to horizontal scaling. I like to my analogy is a little bit different than the pets versus cattle. I like to call it pets versus midget cattle, where really breaking up your favorite application instead of thinking of it as something that you have to really care for is making it a swarm of undesirables or disposables that you're not caring that much about. That the capacity management is helping you to deal with resiliency and meeting load needs and performance needs.
Right. Excellent. All right. I really appreciate these insights. They're great.
Sure, no problem.